The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight! TV party tonight!
Oh, we got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated
to our favorite shows.
Oh, Mike took it.
Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Gary Dawg.
Lurkin at Blurnville.
Futurama.
I just realized I did the whole thing and I was muted because I'm an idiot. Yeah, I've got you guys. Shut up, Adam. So I think Mark just messaged me too about it.
I sure did.
Oh, no, that was you did. Yeah, you did.
We're all messaging you, Ronnie.
It's like my lot in life to fail miserably. Anyway, as I was saying, welcome to TV Party Night. I am not Mark Rattledge. I'm much prettier than him. My name is Ronnie Adams. And it's like I was saying, it's like a Screaming Boy podcast, the show that I used to do. It's like a reunion. I've got one of my favorite guests on here. Well, co-host. And I've got my co-host from Screaming Boy. I've got totally 80s falling out Pat. How you doing, Pat?
We're doing great, Ronnie. This isn't in my usual wheelhouse, so this is going to be interesting.
It's really cool. And then we've got Adam Pip-Boy Runyon. How's it going, Pip-Boy?
It's going wonderful. How are you doing, Ronnie?
can't see your lovely face, bearded face.
I know. I'm sorry about that. It's probably for the better, though.
So if you couldn't guess, what we're talking about tonight is Fallout Season 1. So Fallout Season 1 is something I've been waiting for a long time. It's on Amazon. It's an Amazon Prime show. And, you know, we're just going to be like, cat,
cats.
we're going to be really relaxed about this. We're going to have some fun. So, I'm not going to go through every single daggone, show in the season, but, we're going to talk about it. We're going to give our thoughts on it. And then, we'll call it a night. Does that sound good, guys?
Sounds great.
All right.
I think that's a heck of a plan.
Fallout. Woo. If you can't tell, North Carolina has been wonderful to my allergies. But, I'm going to go around the table here, and I'm going to ask Pat, what is your relationship or background with Fallout? Fallout, as
so
you know,
funny
came
story,
from the video
I have game. None.
You have none. And that's
I
why
do know
awesome
that part of it, yeah.
That's why you're awesome. That's why I wanted you on the show.
I'm not much of a gamer anymore, unfortunately. Not because I think they're lame or anything like that. I think video games are awesome. I'm just particularly bad at quite a few of them and don't have the amount of time I'd like to in order to play them to fully enjoy them.
Right.
But yeah, this was an interesting one because I knew you were super passionate about it. And I was like, you know what? Ronnie's taste tends to be something I usually am okay with. So let's jump in on this one and see what we got. And of course, once I heard Walton Goggins was a part of the cast, it's a very easy decision to watch it. This is really my big Fallout exposure, believe it or not.
Nice. Okay, all right, Adam, what about you, bud?
We
can't see you.
Before we get too far into it, can I propose that we use the term Walton Goggins from here on out?
I don't know if I can do that, buddy.
I thought I'd check with you guys before I just sprung it on you. No.
I don't know if I can do that and keep a straight face.
So my experience with Fallout goes back literal decades. I played Fallout 1, Fallout 2 back in high school. I played Fallout Tactics. I played 3. I played New Vegas. I played every single one of them. So all the minute, funny little details. And I think, Ronnie, I think we've talked about this. Again, we've had this conversation decades ago about how much of a Fallout fan I was, you know, and how much of a Fallout fanboy I have been. So it's one of those things where all the little tiny minute details I kind of geeked out about a whole lot. So this, for me, this was, I don't want to say a dream come true, but it was absolutely one of the most fun things that I have seen on television in a long time. So we'll kind of give you the background there, and then we'll go from there.
Well, that's awesome. As you know, that as big a fan as you are of Fallout, I would like to say that I'm a bigger fan. Because I too have played all the games. I have the only one that I'm not like I am familiar with, but I don't remember. But I know I played it because it was Fallout. It was Fallout, the Fallout Tactics game. But it was a mobile game, right?
Yeah, it wasn't that great. Honestly, it's not that great.
Looks like
I played it because it's Fallout. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I played, actually my first introduction to Fallout was Fallout 2, and I went back and played Fallout 1 and played 2, and of course I had to get 3, and then when 4 came out, I was like one of the first ones in line, I felt like. And then Fallout 76 came out, and I was a staunch defender of that game. Because they said it's not Fallout 5, and it's based in my home state of West, or well, Adam, our home state of West Virginia. And, you know, you got the Mothman, had Camden Park in it and everything else that has to do with West Virginia. It was expressly told that it was an MMORPG. So when you're thrown into the world and you have to fight the things in the wild and there's no one to point you where to go, everybody's like, oh, this sucks. Well, it's because it's not Fallout 5, and that's what everybody was expecting. So I was a defender of Fallout 76, and nobody wanted to play it with me. And when I gave up, that's when everybody started playing it. Because, yes, it had some bugs. They patched it. It started working really good. And then everybody's like, oh, this is, you know, not everybody, but people are like, this is great. And I'm like, well, I told you that, but now I can't keep up with you.
That, so, yeah. I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, you are. You really are. So yeah,
when they updated it, I was like, let's play it. And you were like, dude, I'm over it. And I'm like, all right, cool.
So Fallout, as you may or may not know out there in TV Party Tonight land, it is a post-apocalyptic role-playing video game. So when you say role-playing, it is a first-person view. There's so much to go along with it, but basically the whole thing has to go. It's the post-war culture of 1950s United States, but it's a different timeline where everything is. I mean, it's like an atomic age, like they call it that anyway. But everything runs off of nuclear power at that point. And all the cars and there's robots called Mr. Handy that float in the air, and they're butlers. And then they start selling. You realize that you are sold, or you find yourself in a vault, and these vaults are built to withstand a nuclear fallout. So in case of war, you would retreat to your vault that you purchased a place in. And you would live underground, and you could sustain yourself for hundreds of years because there was a whole ecosystem in them where you could farm and grow food, and there was canned food. And so, I mean, they even down to what they call cram, which is their version of spam. So, yum, yum, deviled eggs, cram.
Potatoes. They have potato plants. Yeah,
potatoes, you know. what was that?
Somebody doesn't like potatoes.
No. But so there's so much packed into these games. There's so much to see. That's what makes them amazing to me is there's so much, I guess you could say history, and there's so much culture that is packed into these games that they've created. And each game happens in a different place. So if you go back through Fallout 1, let's see, Fallout. Gosh, it's been so long ago. I wonder did that
come
out?
What are you looking for?
1997. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. Fun fact, I didn't know it was based began as the game engine based on the tabletop role-playing game GURPS. Y'all ever heard of GURPS?
I have not. That's interesting.
GURPS is really popular with a lot of old-school gamers. It's a generic universal role-playing system, or GURPS. It's Steve Jackson Games. So they had so much influence behind this, like the Mad Max movies, A Boy and His Dog, different things like that. And they just threw it all in and they said, hey, let's just see what the world would look like after a nuclear fallout. So I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic. I've recently come to grips with why. Pat, are you I'll tell you in a minute because it's a little depressing, but Pat, are you a fan of post-apocalyptic?
Yeah, the good stuff is great. I mean, you brought up the Mad Max franchise. You know, if you go into stuff like I Am Legend, the Mega Man, you know, those are great.
And we're talking we're talking the originals, not the Will Smith.
Even the Will Smith one ain't bad.
Yeah, but
you know, but yeah, you go to the Vincent Price one, and then you know, I Am Legend, and then this, you know, the Steve McQueen Omega Man, and you know, lots of interesting takes that go through that stuff. There's some bad post-apocalyptic stuff out there for sure. Usually it's done on a shoestring budget and aired on Sci-Fi on Saturday nights at 8, but
even those are fun.
and yeah, even though a lot of them have some fun with them. But and even stuff where there's nuclear consequences to things, and that's you know, look at Godzilla, right? Like so I think when it's done well, it's great. Again, I was familiar with the game series, but I didn't play it. But I knew that it was about the world post-nuclear fallout, as the name implies. But this, again, was kind of my first real exposure to see it done this way. And yeah, when good post-apocalyptic stuff is out there, great. When it sucks, it's awful and feels like forever to get through.
It sucks out loud when it sucks. But what about you, Adam? Are you a fan of post-apocalyptic media, books, comic books, you know, all that good stuff?
I am. I think for me it's post-apocalyptic, but it has more of a sci-fi meaning to it, like say Firefly, for example, or even some like even this, you know, the Star Wars movies that kind of take place in what looks to be something like a post-apocalyptic or post-war type of world. But Fallout for me is kind of the, I don't want to use the term gold standard, but kind of when I think of post-apocalyptic stuff, it's definitely Fallout.
You can use gold standard.
Yeah, I think I will use gold standard because when I think of words are hard for me tonight.
That's high praise though, because again, Mad Max, Escape from New York, like that's high praise.
It is.
Right. And while I enjoyed those movies, I mean, that's kind of my love for post-apocalyptic stuff comes from Fallout, you know, and so that's where I spend most of my time and most of my concentration and effort is in Fallout. Ronnie, you brought up Fallout 1. You want to hear a funny story about Fallout 1? Go for it.
So I do want to mention, before you get started, I do want to mention one of my favorite, and it is post-apocalyptic, Planet of the Apes.
100%, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely the Mark Wahlberg.
Head, right? Can't see me. What? When did that happen? I don't know what you're talking about, Pat. Go ahead, Adam.
So Fallout 1 came out when I was I came out in 97, and I didn't actually start high school until 98. But when I first played it, I was a freshman in high school, and I was really afraid to use Jet in the game because I was afraid I'd get virtually high. So I went the entire game and I never used Jet.
Wow. Wow.
So yeah. Wow. And then I think in Fallout 2, I was like, it's just a game, Adam. This isn't going to affect your real life.
Yeah.
So I tried Jet for the first time in Fallout 2.
Such a pure little boy.
It's true. I was.
So I consume a lot of post-apocalyptic media, I guess you could say, TV shows. One of my favorite TV shows is definitely it's not an end of the world scenario, but it is after a nuclear event, and that was Jericho.
I knew it.
Jericho was a really good show for the two seasons it was on. I'm sorry they took it off.
Yeah, that was on CBS, right?
Yeah, yeah. They actually got it. Renewed for a second season because of the story he told about his grandpa, that his grandpa told him about the U.S. soldiers talking to the Nazis in World War II. They said, do you give up? And they just, one word response was nuts, meaning nuts to you, meaning, you know, go screw yourself. So the fans actually mailed thousands of pounds of peanuts to CBS, and they're like, all right, stop. We'll do it. We'll put it on a second season. And so they got.
For Misfits of Science?
Right. It was, like I said, I consume a lot of that because to me, and like I said, this is a little depressing. There's something about hitting that reset button. There's something freeing about hitting that reset button and not having any rules anymore. Not having to worry about taxes or having to go to work the next day or anything like that. Not that, I mean, I like my job, but you know, if something happened and I just wake up and I'd throw a backpack on and I just take off running to see what I can find. I mean, like, that's just, you know, it's what it is. And, you know, I'd hate to live in a land of ghouls and zombies, but you know, what repercussions are there? If you just start,
calling to work,
busting cash, you know, on zombies, you know, so it's just like something about hitting that reset button.
Zombie lives matter. Come on, like there wouldn't be a group that popped up that all of a sudden cared.
I'm sure there will be now.
I mean, that's actually a great point. Actually, and like in Fallout 4. There's actually a whole story arc where you ghouls. Not ghoul. Well, there is, but I was talking specifically about the synths, like the androids.
Where people are mistreating synths and synth lives matter.
Yeah, they really do. But you have to make a legitimate decision, like. Is this an actual life that I'm getting ready to take, or is it
a synthetic
robot?
Life.
Yeah. So Fallout does get kind of deep at some points.
And there are some moral questions that pop up in the games. You know, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You know, they've got the Gek, which hasn't come up in the Fallout show, which is the Garden of Eden
creation kit,
where you can. You know, in a radiated world, you can create a Garden of Eden, which grows life again. So there's all kinds of stuff. You know, do you give it to the secret organization called the Enclave, or do you give it to the people of the wasteland, or you know? So there's a lot of stuff that comes up in that, which leads me to the cast, which leads me to not just the cast but the characters of this show. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. I can't remember names very well because I'm old and you know, it's hard sometimes to remember things. But in Fallout, the series, which I've been waiting on, feels like forever. And then all of a sudden it's here and then it's gone. because I watched all of it in one day almost. You are
thank you, Amazon, for doing the full drop, by the way.
Yes,
because yeah, I love when they do that.
Amazon, you're a champ for doing that, but you suck because of Invincible. They released four episodes and they're like, oh, we're gonna let you wait for a couple like 6 months or whatever. Yeah. You are greeted with our main protagonist. Her name is Nancy McLean, which is funny Lucy. I was looking at her brother's name, Norm, and somehow Nancy came out. But Lucy McLean, which is funny because that's the name of John McLean's daughter in Die Hard. Lucy McLean, she is probably one of the more kind of, well, I'll just say one of the more badass characters I've seen in a while. And then you also have a squire in the Brotherhood of Steel. He's a squire to one of the knights called, and his name is Maximus. Lucy's played by Ella Purnell. Maximus is played by Aaron Moten. And then you have Cooper Howard, who is also known as the Ghoul. And his name is, and he's played by the incredible Walton Goggins. And if there's no other reason to watch the show, it is him. It is absolutely him.
It was the closest we got to getting Boyd Crowder back from Justified.
It's so true. Yes. It's so true. Yes. I hate to say this about Walton, but he plays a lot. Like, he doesn't have to stretch a lot with some of the characters he plays but he always makes them different. But man, I mean, we're talking like The Hateful Eight. We're talking about Justified, this, the other Westerns that he's been in. He's just one of the better
Righteous character Gemstones actors. Righteous Gemstones is Baby Billy.
Righteous Gemstones. He's amazing in that. I almost forgot about that. You know, Lucy lives in Vault 34. She lives a good life. 34 is well ran, well kept, and everybody seems pretty happy down there. And then one day her whole vault is attacked by raiders that were supposed to be from Vault 33. Vault 33, they're wearing Vault 33's jumpsuits. Everybody wears blue and gold jumpsuits with the number of your vault on it. They open up the vault to the Vault 33 dwellers, or, you know, the vault dwellers, and they come in. And they can tell something's off about them because they act like they, you know, well, they have no manners, for one thing. They look like they haven't bathed in months. Assure relationship between the two vaults. So they're going to marry Lucy off to one of the vault dwellers there. The wedding goes off. She doesn't know her husband, but thankfully she thinks these guys are attractive. They consummate the wedding and turns out he's a raider. And that's when the raiders attack and start murdering everybody in Vault 34. And then they kidnap the overseer, which is like the leader of the vault, her dad, and make off with him out into the wasteland, where she sneaks out and makes her way into the wasteland to rescue him. And that is where we begin Fallout. Now, looking at Lucy, who's trained most of her life and gone to school, trained with weapons, because everybody in the vault does for some reason. She knows her way around, some technology. She looks like she can hold her own. But the thing I want to point out about her is when you look at characters such as Maximus, Cooper, the Ghoul, her dad, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but her dad, who's the overseer.
Hank.
Yes, thank you. And the flashbacks where Walton Goggins is playing Cooper Howard, who is a famous actor who's in all these Westerns, and he's married to his wife. His wife is Barb Howard. And even when it comes down to her, everybody has a secret and everybody has a dark side. But Lucy, out of all of them, is the is the most pure, in my opinion. And she gets caught in the middle of everybody else's crap and has to fix everything for them. Or ends up accidentally fixing things for them or making it worse at some points. She's honestly one of my favorite characters, new characters that have come out in a TV show or a movie in a long time. I enjoy how the actress portrays the character, Ella Purnell. I enjoy the dialogue that she has with the others because while others are just dropping F-bombs and everything else, she's, well, oh, fudge sticks, you know, and she just can't bring herself. Okie dokie. You know, she just like they'll even say, all right, they'll point a gun at her face and they're like, all right, get in the refrigerator. And she's like, okie dokie. You know,
I have to ask, are any of these characters actually characters in the game or direct correlations to them? Or
I'm glad you asked because no, this is a brand new storyline. This is actually later on after, like, this is chronologically, it is after everything, after all the video games. It happens the most recent event in Fallout. But there are correlations to other characters in the game, such as the Brotherhood of Steel. They're all through all the Fallout games. They're just a faction of horrible people. No, they're a faction of military that is looking for old tech, old pre-war tech, and they will stop at no means to find it. The ghouls. Yeah. The ghouls. There are ghouls that are still lucid, such as Cooper Howard, such as the ghoul, who have jobs. Fallout 4, that's based out of Boston. There is a ghoul who is a private detective for hire.
Very different than a bounty hunter.
Not very different from a bounty hunter. So you can see that there are correlations between characters, these new characters and the characters in the game.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right.
So, and it's just a thought that I had during, and I saved it for this particular podcast because I love talking to you about the stuff, Ronnie. Mm-hmm. So something that I noticed, and I wasn't 100% clear on this, and I kind of went back and I racked my brain about all this. So there's the part where the ghoul, he throws Lucy. It's Lucy, right?
Yeah,
it's Lucy. Mm-hmm. Throws her off at the little go-mart type thing to go into this body harvesting thing.
Yeah.
But it's the first time that I've ever seen a ghoul try to keep himself from going feral with some sort of Kim. You know what I mean? Like that. I don't know if that was ever touched on any of the games. I don't remember any of them hinting on that. You were either a feral or you were not. And then there was the glowing ones and stuff like that. But they never really explained that in order for the lucid ghouls, as you said, to keep themselves from turning, they had to use a Kim or something, you know, so it wasn't like they're just knocking on doors like, hey, got any more of those Kims, you know, like they had a reason to, I guess, keep going. And I've never seen that. Did you see that at all ever?
I kind of have. We don't know what he's taking.
Right. Exactly.
That's yet to be touched on because I actually was a point I was going to bring up because he is actively keeping himself from going feral. And the only way that you go feral is prolonged exposure to radiation. Ghouls have prolonged exposure to radiation, which causes, and I'm reading this right off the page, mental degeneration and brain damage. Other factors may contribute to ghouls becoming feral include neural tissue degeneration, isolation, age, genetics, and mental activity. So it may just be Kim's that he's taking, which is the word, Fallout word for drugs.
I was going to say, is that what we would refer to as a medikit?
Yeah, no, Kim's are drugs.
No,
straight up.
Yeah,
Kim's they're just straight up drugs. Okay.
Yeah, they're straight up drugs.
The little thing like around. Huh?
They're like poppers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and they all come in like asthma inhalers and you inject.
Oh, they're definitely like poppers then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So do you remember the round, the syringe with the round thing on top that they jammed in and the guy's foot healed? That's a stim pack. That's a medikit. Yeah.
But like that would mean that the ghoul had been taking Kims for like 200 years, which is crazy if you think about it.
Well, I mean,
it's not. Look at Keith Richards.
Exactly. That's where I was going to go. I mean, and then you quit and you get Ozzy Osbourne.
So Ozzy Osbourne's the lucid ghoul?
No, he's the feral. He's the feral, definitely. Because when he doesn't get what he wants, he yells a lot. And you can't understand him. But I love Ozzy. But there's, as I said, there's so much in the show that we can touch on. It would take me 4 hours to really go through everything and tell you everything. Oh, look at this, look at this, look at this. Look at the gulper that came up out of the water.
That was kind of cool too, by the way.
That was really cool.
Creepy. It was creepy, but it was cool.
But if you notice that every episode, every major character that they touched on had to make a moral decision. I mean, at some point they had to make some sort of like vague moral decision.
Morally challenging or questionable decision.
Yeah, there we go. That had
serious consequences. Like somebody would either like lose a foot or a finger, or they'd have to their body would be mutilated in some way, which is exactly what goes on in the wasteland.
Yeah,
I freaking love it.
But
okay, that's pretty cool that they brought that element then. I like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about Maximus a little bit. Maximus is the squire for the... That's what I'm waiting for. Maximus is the squire for the knight of Brother of Steel. His knight is named Titus.
Yes.
Knight Titus. Who's Michael knight Rappaport. Titus.
Which, oh my gosh. Yes. I died. My wife had never heard the F word used in such strings.
She's never seen a Michael Rappaport movie then.
Shout out to the cameos in this show for just random pop-ups.
Yeah, and I forgot, you know, Lucy's dad is Overseer McClane, who is
Kyle McLaughlin.
Kyle McLaughlin, who was in Northern Exposure?
Twin Peaks.
No,
Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
Northern Exposure. Where the frick did that come from?
I don't know. I love Northern Exposure though. Tremendous show.
That's on my list of things to watch, by the way. Just an FYI.
Excellent Binger.
Yeah, but he was also the original Dune.
That's what I want.
But what I know him from is the original Dune, and because I still love that movie no matter what. I'm sorry. It is amazing to me. Amazingly bad, but amazing. But, you know, he's been in, like I said, like you all said, Twin Peaks. I think he was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well.
He was Mr. Hyde.
Yeah. Calvin Zabo. Yeah. Calvin Zabo, Mr. Hyde. And then amongst other things like
Dune, How I Met Your Mother,
Blue Velvet. Yeah. Dune. I love Dune. I said, I can't, I'm not, I'm never
the original apologizing. And the superior treaties.
Yes. But he's been in so many things and he's just a wonderful actor and he does such a good job in this.
Showgirls.
I've never seen that.
I don't think I've ever seen that movie either. For the same reason I didn't take Jet in Fallout 2. So
you're afraid you're gonna get intoxicated online?
But get in trouble.
Chris Parnell, who plays the one-eyed vault dweller. Yeah.
Fred Cyclops, Armisen pops up.
Fred Armisen. There are so many.
Who was the scientist guy?
Michael Emerson. He was in it was in Lost. Lost, was one of the,
And he was in Person of Interest too.
Yeah.
That was a good movie. That was a good show.
But there are all kinds of really good really amazing cameos in this that like I didn't recognize well, first of all, if you don't know Michael Rapaport by his voice, just his voice, then you just don't know Michael Rapaport. But Chris Parnell had me like double guessing myself for a while until he started cutting the rope with the sword, and I was like, yeah, that's definitely him. That's definitely him.
I didn't even have to look at it to be like, oh, that's from the dude from Rick and Morty. It's the dad.
Yeah,
Rick
the dad. SNL, Hot Rod, all kinds of stuff. Maximus is the squire. So basically he's the gun caddy for the knight. He just carries a large bag full of weapons. And he follows the knight around.
Caddy. That was literally when I saw that. I was caddy. Like, he's carrying the bags. Okay.
So yeah.
Give me my pitching.
So here's my, I have a theory about that. So you know how in Fallout, if you play the games, you get over encumbered. And I swear, I think those giant bags that they have is just the game the show paying homage to the game of being over encumbered because it's absolutely so awkward. And they have everything that they could ever need in this giant bag. And then the knight's just walking around, like, you know, just doing his knight thing. But his squire is like dragging this thing through the wasteland. And I saw that and I was like, that's what over encumbered looks like. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I love it.
In the video game, obviously, as he said, you can be over encumbered and you move so slowly that it's actually like at some point you just start dumping stuff whether you need it or not. And maybe you can come back to later on in the game and it'll still be there, but it probably won't. But Maximus is, we'll just say he's a subpar squire who is living life and is in this encampment with the Brotherhood of Steel. And he's never going to be picked for knight or squire, for any knight squire or to be a knight himself, because he's really just honestly that bad. Until his friend puts their boot on, he can't tell, and screams, and you look down, and the foot is absolutely shredded, and there are razor blades embedded in this person's boot. So he is picked by proxy because he's next, you know, he's next to her, next in line, and they don't want him, but they got him, and he gets out in the wasteland with his knight. His knight fights an irradiated bear, a cave bear, and loses. I couldn't remember what it was called, but it's just the giant cave bear loses, and the entire time. He ends up killing the bear for the knight by two well-placed shots to the head. And the knight, he says, you know, you're a terrible squire. They're going to kill you for this. They're going to, you know, you're never going to make it out alive. When I tell everybody you're done, blah, blah, blah. And is blaming him for everything. So Maximus ends up killing the knight and taking his power armor and becoming Knight Titus himself. And, he ends up getting a squire of his own who was the squire that picked on him in camp. And I'm of the same mind as you, Pat. Whenever he came on the screen, I was interested in the storyline, but I always gave that little, because he just, I don't know. There's something, I don't know if it's the actor. The actor's doing a good job, I guess, because I don't think Maximus is supposed to be a likable character, and he's not to me. He's just he takes advantage of the situation. He finally steps up when he feels like Lucy's in danger and screws everything up again. So, am I right in saying it's the character and not the actor, or what do you think?
Yeah, the character first of all is very one dimensional throughout.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of depth there. you know, and again, he's an opportunist, is probably the best way to say it based on the circumstances. He seemed to have joined the Brotherhood with the best of intentions, but once he got there, basically got private jokered and hazed the shit out of, and, you know, disliked by generally everybody for whatever reason. And, you know, at that point, it wasn't exactly what he was hoping for. We don't know that he's not the one who put the razors into the shoe to get himself a gig.
We do.
Immediately, but then we see it. And,
oh, sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, they kind
of... I was just so happy to know not a right answer. I just had...
They kind of just paint that initially to see if you assume that, and then they confirm it like, yeah, okay, he did do this. And throughout, again, he takes the armor from his dying knight who he helps kill. He takes advantage of situations up until the very last episode where, not to spoil it, but if you're watching this, you know, you probably shouldn't have been doing this. So spoiler alert, when What's-Her-Face plugs the power source back in, the Brotherhood thinks it was him when she dies doing it.
Yeah.
And certainly he's not going to deny that.
He tries, but
not really.
He tries. He's like, but no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. And they're like, yeah, Maximus. And he's like, okay, let's roll with it. But it's just like you said, a very one dimensional character. That Adam, do you have anything to say about Maximus?
I kind of got the feeling the same feeling that you guys did. I wanted to like him because he's kind of like, you know, the dude that's, you know, in the show. But again, I really wasn't impressed. I thought I guess I had higher hopes for somebody wearing power armor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, get it.
If he, you know, I really wanted him, like, I don't know. And I kind of liken it back to, if you look at every single character, like let's make the assumption they're player characters, right? And these people are making just stupid decisions where it's like, oh well, I'll say this in the text or in the dialogue selection. So they'll say something and then it won't pan out, and then they'll change their answer for the second. You know what I mean? So if you kind of look at it that way, as if like somebody's actually like quote unquote playing the game, you know, then you're gonna have ridiculous things. But I will say that I have left my share of power armor just standing in the wasteland.
The fusion core?
Because the fusion core died, you know? Yeah. So when there's no fusion core in it, he just gets out and leaves it. Like, to me, that's one of the funniest freaking things. He's like,
oh, I know.
I'll just go get another one. On a side note, by the way, to talk about cameos, we missed a big one. It's Eric Estrada.
Oh yeah.
Beating up was episode Eric 7.
Yeah,
and he was wearing like NCR stuff, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry. Back to the Maximus stuff. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. He's kind of a one dimensional character. I want to like him, but he's not really doing it for me for when it, you know, the whole Knight Brotherhood of Armor thing. So like, it's almost like. It's almost like he wants to be a knight, but he's got this kind of a moral obligation to not make those kinds of decisions, you know, because they really kind of portrayed the Brotherhood of Steel to be these just utter like chads in the whole wasteland. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they really are.
They're dicks in the whole. They're a bag of dicks through the whole thing.
They are.
No, they truly are. Chads.
Yeah, they're chads. I mean, through the video game series, they are too. I mean, let's be honest.
You're right, but you as the player, you have the choice to not be that guy, and that's kind of the point I was making. Like, I think that's kind of what they're doing with Maximus is he has the choice to not be, you know, Giga Chad and. and you know, lay waste to the wasteland because he's got a set of power armor, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Walton Goggins' two characters who are completely not different from one another, but you see Walton Goggins playing Howard Cooper in the beginning, and he stops this scene that he's acting in this Western. The script calls for him, the good guy, the white hat, to shoot the bad guy, who is at that point unarmed and lying on the ground. So he stops the movie shoot, and he says, do I really have to shoot him? Can I just, you know, tie him up and throw him in jail? Because morally, it was wrong for his character, who's a good guy, the white hat, as I said, to just shoot an unarmed man just for vengeance. And that was the point he was trying to get across. Cut to 200 years later, he's a ghoul who's lost everything in a nuclear war or a nuclear explosion, who is that guy. He's a bounty hunter who will just gun you down before he'll even say hi. He's one of the coolest characters that I've ever seen. Even in the games, I think that he deserves a Fallout offshoot of his adventures, you know, a video game of his adventures, in my opinion. I'd play that all day long, but then it wouldn't be the role-playing game that it's always been.
No, it'd be Red Dead Redemption.
It'd be Red Dead Redemption. Absolutely. I just want Red Dead Redemption as a ghoul.
they did have zombie mode in that game, but
they did. They did. It was okay.
See, I know some core. I know some video games. I played a
you
couple.
You yeah. should. I need you to play Red Dead Redemption 2 one day down
there. I was going to say, you know that there's a second one now, right?
Completely sandbox. No. Yeah.
Wait, there's completely a second. Sandbox.
But the thing about it is, Pat, you've never played the game, so the first one tells of a nuclear war that happened between the United States and China.
Like that could ever happen.
I don't know, right? Who's well, nobody.
Shh, we don't want to.
It's definitely fiction, but it's always kind of left ambiguous of how the bomb dropped and how it happened and everything. Now, the bomb that the series drops, see what I did there, is that we finally find out who actually drops the bomb in this. So Walton Goggins' wife, who seems like this lovely woman who he's absolutely in love with. They have a beautiful daughter. They have a wonderful wife. She starts to work for a company that he doesn't know much about. And then finally she gets him an acting gig because of his, his acting days are almost up, but she gets him one doing a commercial for, the vaults, Vault Tech, Vault, and that's who she's working for, is Vault Tech. And he notices slight changes throughout the thing, that she's wearing a Pit Boy. They're developing a new system called Pit Boy, and he can, you know, that can do everything for them. And there's, you know, they talk about there's no dogs allowed in the vaults, and he's obviously like, what the crap? Why not? You know, why can't we bring our pets? It's crazy. Yeah. There are slight changes in her attitude and in her character, which I think she did a wonderful job portraying this, going from the loving wife and always being there for him to she almost grows cold towards him throughout the series. But we find out, Pat, who actually dropped the bombs. And that was Vault-Tec themselves to make sure.
When you have no competition, you have everything.
Exactly. When you have no competition, you have everything. So what do? You get rid of it and you start over.
Yeah, but their whole thing was like, how do we ensure that our investments are going to pay off? And she's like, she's like, well, the only way we can.
Exactly.
We drop the bomb ourselves. We control the end of the world. Which is right on par with Fallout as a franchise, right? So you leave Vault in Fallout 3. You leave the Vault. You go to Megaton. That giant bomb that's in Megaton literally says Vault Tech on it.
Yeah, it does.
So you're like you're. I forgot about it. So you're like you're like, what's going on? And you kind of get little tiny things, and you have to pay attention to that kind of stuff in the game. Like I'm not a reader of all those little tiny things. And I think, Ronnie, I'd mentioned this to you. The first time I'd ever noticed, I guess I didn't put two and two together, was when they were at the Red Rocket stations.
Yeah.
And it was like coolant. And I was like, cool. Wait a second. And it finally dawned on me that these nuclear fission cars would need coolant rather than gasoline. And it never dawned on me. I read it, but that's the kind of little tiny thing that you have to pay attention to in the game in order to really appreciate the subtleties for that kind of stuff in the show.
I was testing out a gun in the game that I'd gotten or built or something, and I was shooting this car on the side of the road. I was like, yeah, bow, 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 and looking at it, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, bow, 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 bow. And I shot it so many times, I'd never noticed that it started smoking, and then it blew up.
The gun did?
No, the daggone car. It was a small, it was a tactical nuke in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. Well, I need to start that play over because it killed me. But yeah, through the whole thing, you never really know who. I mean, it never really, really, to my knowledge, of course, a lot of times I have a bad habit of speed playing these. It was kind of left ambiguous of who dropped the bomb. Now, let's real quick, I just want to show appreciation for when the first bomb goes off. Right before that, they were talking about the thumbs up, and then all through all of the Fallout games, you always see that little blonde headed guy with his thumb up. And I knew it before the show, but literally they used to believe that if you held your thumb up to the mushroom cloud, and the cloud was not, you couldn't see the cloud past your thumb, you were in a safe zone. But if you could, you better run. And if you couldn't run, then you were just gone. And that's what he was explaining to his daughter.
Yeah.
And it was such a cool scene when she says, Dad, my thumb or yours?
Yeah, that's great. Oh. Yeah. So is Cooper Action Boy?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because he's like, Cooper, give me a thumbs up. Because he's like the spokesperson for Fallout or for Vault-Tec. And like, Cooper, give me a thumbs up. And he kept doing the smile and the thumbs up thing. I think Action Boy
was already created before he was involved.
I don't know. It's just a thought that I had during.
I think it's the blonde-headed kid.
Seven. Yeah, it's like the, for lack of a better term, it's like a logo or a mascot, right?
Yeah.
You know. So it's just a thought that I had because when he was doing those pictures for him, I think it's in like the eighth episode. Let me just tell you about episode eight. There's a lot of stuff that goes down in episode eight. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
So I get them mixed up, but I think it was episode eight where he was doing like a photo shoot or something. And they were like, Cooper, give us a thumbs up. And he gave that, you know, flashed a smile and gave him a thumbs up. And I was like, is he Action Boy?
No, I think it was a logo already before they got to him because, you know, the suit and everything. But
in what they show wrong. In what they show on the show, if I recall correctly, they did already have the logo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost being brought in kind of like a Ronald McDonald type where he's not necessarily going to be Action Boy, but he's going to be a live action spokesperson for this because he does have some magnitude of celebrity from his days as a Western star. So he's seen as the good guy. He played all these good guy parts. So naturally, if he's endorsing them, it's got to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
I see what you're getting at. They kind of brought him in as a live action mascot.
I will say he reminded me in a lot of ways of Rick Dalton from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Character, but
that movie.
A guy who's past his prime, you know.
But keeps on pushing. Yeah. I love that where he went to Spaghetti Westerns, you know, because he, a little past his prime. So what do? You go to Italy. But now this, I'm going to be honest. This question is mostly for Pat because you've never played the games. This little twist that they gave us on the who actually dropped the bombs. Was this something you saw coming in watching, or was this something that was like a for me, it was a holy crap moment. Like, oh my God. But was this something that you were like, this is a little fishy. This is a little shady.
Yes, but I think they gave a lot of foreshadowing to that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, over certain amounts of time where they continually tell Lucy, like, you know, your people aren't what you think they are. When they find out that the code that was used to access the vault was her mother's code. Well, who would have that? You know, we never really get the explanation of what happened to her mother. She's just not there. No, you're good. Little hints and things like that throughout where it's Kyle MacLachlan and, you know, he disappears quite instantly almost in the show. And I'm like, he's got to play a bigger part than that. Although they do a good job of splicing in the cameos to make you think maybe not.
Yeah.
But with the amount of foreshadowing they did and not knowing the story, my conclusion was going to be, especially, and then you go to the other side with Walton Goggins' character, and they do all this, you know, spy mission type stuff with the wife. You had to figure it was going into a big payoff. And at a certain point, I felt like the only logical payoff was going to be that Vault-Tec was responsible for everything in the beginning. And they're just war profiteering. And sure enough, that is what happened.
I guess I was just, I'm too used to the games. So I was like, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, and just soaking it, you know. But to me, I mean, it's a beautiful twist in the story, especially now that you know kind of the background of it. I know we gave kind of a spliced up one, but now that you know the background of the story, that people were blaming on a war between the United States and China, but actually it wasn't. It was actually an American company that decided to take out America, and then essentially the whole world after that. I think an amazing twist to me. I mean, it makes me look at the whole franchise in a different light now.
Predictable doesn't mean bad.
Absolutely not.
When it's well written.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of at a crossroads here about this exact thing, and I thought about this too because previously you didn't know who dropped the bombs. However, it was hinted that China did. In fact, there's a DLC for Fallout 3 called Operation Anchorage, where you go and you fight in the war in Anchorage. And that's where like the stealth boy is first found. Mm-hmm. And you basically become a ninja, and it's a stealth mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you the story and everything like that. But if I'm not mistaken, like Fallout 3, like the bombs dropped like way prior to Fallout 3, but I don't know where Operation Anchorage or that war took place as far as the bombs dropped. You know what I mean?
The global nuclear war was supposed to between United States and China happened in 2077.
That was when the bombs dropped.
Yes. So you're looking at 2161, if I'm not mistaken,
The first Fallout. Yeah, yeah.
Correct. And then the second Fallout, I believe, which was 1998, was 2241, 80 years after Fallout, and 164 years after the atomic war.
So, with that, and I guess that does kind of, you know, I guess it kind of makes sense because because Cooper talked about wearing the armor. He's like, I wore that armor. Because if you remember the very last episode, he's like, I wore that armor. Let's see if that weld just beneath the chest plate is still there if they fixed it. And he's like, nope.
Well, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
That whole stuff that's been around forever because of the
war. Right. So, my point is like, so you had Operation Anchorage, you had the Chinese dropping the bomb, or did they convince people that the Chinese dropped it and they did it because the war was going on? Because all that stuff that's going on between like Cooper and Vault-Tec, that happened after Anchorage. So they were like, oh, well, we got to drop the bomb. So it's like, which bomb came first, the one in what would you say 2077, or the one that blew up Shady Sands, which is Fallout New Vegas, right?
Right. Well, the very first bomb. Yeah. Well, I think it's is it Fallout New Vegas?
New Vegas. Shady Sands was the it was like the seat of the NCR, the new California Republic.
I've been told that this takes a lot of more than any of the other games. It deals with New Vegas the most.
It does, yeah.
It does, but again, you have to. So New Vegas for me is the perfect Fallout game. That's my favorite one. It was.
It's really good.
I'm not going to say it's a perfect game all the way around, but at the time, for me, it was everything that I wanted out of Fallout 3. But I never got right. So Fallout 3 to me was at the time a perfect game, and then I learned my lesson not to say a perfect game. So then New Vegas came out, and I was like, "No, this is a perfect game." So then I stopped. You know,
New Vegas stuff. To me is an amazing game, Nathan, because it has Matthew Perry as a voice actor.
Yes, dude. But
that's pretty cool.
He's the courier. Yeah, you're the courier.
You're the courier. He's Benny, the owner of the Platinum Chip. It's the Platinum Chip, right?
Yeah.
The one that owns the Platinum Chip. Yeah.
Is it Mr. Big? Is it Big? The computer dude? I can't remember what his name was.
No. Anyway.
I'm racking my brain because I can't remember.
But there's so many things that's coming up because there's a war after the bombs drop.
I think you're right.
There's a war after the bombs drop, but the war that Cooper's talking about is another completely different war before any bombs dropped. So Vault-Tec has all of this technology out there, and then you know, other technology. I mean, it's not just Vault-Tec. There's other technology out there because I mean, even though they're it's 2077 when the bombs go off, they're still stuck in that atomic age of the 50s, you know. But they're still like. It's just like steampunk, you know. There's electricity and stuff, but it's the Victorian era. 1950s, there's all this technology, but they still keep that pureness of the 1950s. You know, they just keep it rolling. There's so much that has to be unlocked in this. But to me, we're gonna have to wrap it up here. But hopefully, it wasn't too like. All over the place and everything because of my brain, but
I will say that if there's an issue I take with the show, I understand that it's got a lot of moving parts and they have to introduce these characters. And while Ronnie gives us epilepsy for a moment,
sorry, my TV just came on in the background. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, but again, I understand there's a lot of moving parts. We have to understand the background of the ghoul. We have to understand the background of Lucy. We have to understand, Maximus's background. I don't think they do a great job a lot of the time of weaving those together consistently where the show feels like you're watching, you know, instead of one episode of a show, you're watching three different episodes and can take your focus out of them because it doesn't – I don't think it was paced well in that respect. I think – they would get so invested in the backstory of one of them that by the time it was over, you thought the episode was over. And then they're flashing into something else.
Yeah.
And it made it feel longer in certain episodes than it was, especially those, you know, probably like episode 3, 4, 5, I would say more than the others. 1 and 2, you kind of expect such a thing. And it moved at a pretty good pace in 1 and 2. 7, 8 just goes balls to the wall.
Yeah. Like
that middle part of the show, it really did kind of slow down. Trying to give you all the backstory, but I almost wonder if they'd have been better served to give each character their own individual episode on a past, you know, introducing.
I agree.
I'm glad you said that because I completely agree with that. That is actually a note that I wrote down. I would like to have seen Maximus have his whole episode and Cooper have his whole own episode in the whole night. And then you got that weird naked scene in episode 6 where the cult that was odd. I don't know. That's
so Fallout though, man.
It really is. I mean, there's cults.
Yes.
If I can explain Fallout to you, the game to you, in one character, Pat, it would be that weird half-naked guy that's living in the house. He's just standing out in these tidy whities. That's okay. Fallout.
And he just takes your her water and runs with it and takes the whole thing right in front of her. That's exactly it. You're 100% right.
That's it because you run into that stuff all the time in these games. And you get derailed.
Yeah. You get derailed like the bullcrap stuff that happens in the wasteland that happens exactly like that. It's like, hey, you want to buy some Kims? And you're like, no, I don't. But what do you have? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I hope they get into how bottle caps, the Nuka-Cola bottle caps become currency, things like that. But I mean, we've got a whole new season coming up because it was renewed.
Yeah, which is awesome.
It's awesome. So this is something obviously that we've all three enjoyed. I'm going to do something I don't know that we've ever done on TV Party Night or on the Radulich Broadcasting Network. I'm going to ask Pat and Adam. I'm going to ask y'all to give it some stars, 1 out of 10. Or, I mean, 1 through 10.
Adam, do you want the honors first?
Sure. Yeah. So
go for it.
I'm gonna give it a 8.9. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a solid 8.9, just because my only complaint with it is that I feel like it was, and I feel like there needed to be more than 8 episodes. First off. Because I felt like they kind of crammed a whole lot into the first 7 episodes. And then that last episode, they were like, we're just going to give you everything else and open it up for the rest of the season. And I felt like they should have at least made maybe 1 or 2 more episodes. Also, something that I wish they had put in there is historically Bethesda has been notorious for putting bugs into their games and having buggy video games. I wish they would have put like an homage or something to a popular bug, you know, like phasing through walls or somebody, you know, doing something goofy, you know, in the background that happens in the game, but it doesn't have any impact on the game. I wish they would have done that because I thought that would have been hilarious. So for me, it's a solid 8.9 because there can never be a perfect 10 out of 10.
I would have to give it an 8, and I think it's a pretty good score.
Yeah,
for me, and again, you know, I'm not, you know, in on the source material on this one. I'm, you know, I'm new to Fallout, but I think it was well developed enough where somebody who's not into the games could find it very enjoyable. I thought it told a lucid story that you could follow. For me, it's just the pacing in that middle portion of the show that needed to be improved upon. Could have worked a little better. I'm not sure they've completed the story they want to tell with Maximus, obviously, but I'm not going to call it a negative because I don't think his performance as an actor was negative. I think he was written to be disliked to a certain level, but they're teetering that fine line between you dislike him because he's one-dimensional or you dislike him because he's just not a moral character. It's an interesting juxtaposition where you're to believe the ghoul has no morality but shows more morality towards the end of the run of the first season than, you know, he does, and it that I think was well developed and is a good turn for that in that respect. But yeah, 8 out of 10 is my score for this one, and I think that's a pretty darn good score. I enjoyed this score. I'm looking forward to season 2.
Good deal. Good deal. I'll give mine. It's probably a little bit of fanboy in there, but I'm going to give it a solid 9. Mainly because I found every bit of it enjoyable, except for the dragging in the middle. That's why it doesn't get a 9.5 or a 9.9 or anything like that. It's very hard to get a solid 10 out of me, even though I like a lot of things. I will go that far. I will go as far as a really high, solid, strong 9. Just fix your pacing. And being a fan of the, like I said, fanboy, being a fan of the video game series, I did not run across, certain issues like Pat did, but I think, there's more to come. I think this is, a solid, you know, freshman outing for this, and I'd like to see it keep going after season two.
And for the record, I'd just like to point out that I'm here because at the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, we have a history of putting people who don't follow the source material on shows about said properties, and I'm just happy to fill that role in on this one.
I love you, Pat. That's amazing. So I asked Pat to be on the show because he's an amazing on every show he's on, and I just thought he'd be a good seat to have. But also, what he said, and then you know, and he pays attention to messages. But other than that, guys, I appreciate your time, folks out there. I hope you enjoyed it. As I said, I hope it wasn't too muddled because my brain is addled. I actually fly out to Vegas Sunday morning at 6 a.m. for a work conference. So I've been packing and washing clothes and things like that, and I still got to work so 2 days.
You chose to watch Fallout before you go to Vegas.
Yeah, and I know what to do. But either just go out like this and hope I become a ghoul or hide. But guys, you guys are awesome. I thank you very much. Let's go ahead and, Pat, what you got coming up next, with the RIB?
Believe it or not, you're involved in this one, Ronnie. Cause this year on the RIB, we want to have fun. And recall, we pitched a show a while back about, some back to school special type stuff. And, we pitched a show where we were going to watch some violent, over-the-top movies in schools. So we had pitched the idea of The Principal with Jim Belushi, The Substitute with Tom Berenger, and 187 mm-hmm. with Samuel L. Jackson. Then Mark changed it to a bunch of movies that aren't about that.
Right.
And we watched those instead.
We said, hey, Mark, let's watch this, this, and this. And he goes, that's a great idea. So we're going to watch Stand and Deliver. We're going to watch Lean on Me, and then we're going to watch, what was the other one?
Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds. We were like, no.
All serious dramatic features about problematic schools and the kids in them.
We want
the opposite of what we wanted to do. We wanted to watch some over-the-top violence in action.
Yeah.
Like The Faculty.
No, yeah, get some aliens in there too, man.
Why not? Yeah, why not? I was gonna say, no, that's soft, but why not? Let's get some aliens in there.
You know, let's do it. Let's do it.
This time around, we're gonna actually do the show we pitched. I guess it'll kind of be more like a spring break special or a school's out special.
That's cool.
We're gonna be doing triple feature. We're gonna be doing The Principal from 1987 with Jim Belushi, Louis Gossett Jr. We're going to be doing The Substitute from 1995 with Tom Berenger and Mark Anthony and Ernie Hudson, who's still in tremendous shape if y'all haven't noticed the internet trend lately.
He's pushing 80, and dude is jacked. Yeah.
And we'll be watching 187 with the also seemingly ageless Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah. Which is wonderful. I look forward to that so much. It's going to be so much fun. Actually, on the Radulich Broadcasting Network, I've got coming up Whiskey Rebellion. We're going to talk all things Star Wars and their a-hole fans. So that's what we're going to do on the Whiskey Rebellion. Apparently, I have taken a co-host seat in that, and we're bringing back the Whiskey Rebellion on that. So, and this is the first time that Adam has nice picture, Adam. I like it.
Finally got it working.
This is the first one I know I've dropped on Adam. We'll talk about it together later. But Pat and I were talking one day, and we're going to do a little bit of a break off here soon, within the next couple of months, because I got some other stuff in the works as well. We're going to be restarting the Screaming Boy podcast.
Is this your official? Are you telling me this now?
Yeah. I'm saying this. It's coming back.
This is breaking news.
Breaking news. It's coming back. It's going to be me and Pat and Adam. If you want to join in on this, you better tell me, because we want you. Not to put you on the spot on live TV or live radio.
Well, I mean, I'm not doing much right now. So
no, you never did.
Hey, that makes two of us, Adam.
Wow, no, I'm kidding. the other thing. So we're making the announcement. It'll be back soon. The other thing is I've got a actual play stream coming up at the end of the month where I'm going to take four of my friends through Lost Mine of Phandelver and D&D. And then after we finish that, we're going to move our way into another Curse of Strahd game. But with that is going to come more D&D content, Magic the Gathering content, and I'm going to be doing online one-shots of other D&D and other games too, which are going to be involving Pat and Adam and my friend Hassel, who now lives in near Wisconsin. I think he lives in Indiana. He was in just Germany. Not
Warhammer. They're a bunch of damn crooks.
No. Warhammer, they tricked me into – I've got a bunch of Warhammer stuff now. And I wish I could sell it and get my money back.
My gosh.
But, no, it's going to be there's a new one out called Candela Obscura, which is occult investigations in steampunk Victorian era.
All this is going to be online?
It's going to be online. I'm going to run it online. Because
I'm raising my hand.
I already said you were involved.
I'm raising my hand because I want to play.
You and me both, Adam. Let's do it.
Most of these things are going to be the games that are mostly theater of the mind, which is going to be called Cthulhu, which is going to be possibly Everyday Heroes, which is another game that borrows from everything, but there are several one-shots and small campaigns that are based off of Rambo, Escape from New York, and other 80s action movies. So
sign me up.
Yeah, we're going to be doing all this stuff, and we're going to be doing some role-playing and hanging out. And that starts our official stuff is going to be starting at the end of this month, end of May.
I'm already in the weight room getting ready for it.
Nice. Me too, as you can tell. No, I'm getting back in the weight room. It's going to be a lot of fun. Folks, that's pretty much it for us. Is there anything else y'all want to say?
No, nope, cool. I'm good. I really enjoyed Walton Goggins.
Oh, you're not. You're. I rescind everything now.
No, please don't. Let me hang out with you guys. Oh, I'm cool.
Okay, stop. You're embarrassing me in front of company.
You sound desperate.
No, shut up. With that, I'm going to borrow a line from Mark Radulich and say, "Be good, be well, and behave."
Almost.